There's plenty of room for the wagons, but I ain't sure what your friend Cortland is gonna do with those horses. The corral ain't big enough for all of them.
He can put the best ones inside and build a pen outside for the others. There's plenty of cottonwoods along the river to use for peeled poles.
I reckon that'd work. Remember I said Mr. Langley, the bourgeois, had something else interesting about him?
Yeah.
Well, there she is now.
The red-bearded trapper nodded toward the big trading post. The preacher turned his head and his eyes widened in surprise, just as Harrigan had predicted. A beautiful woman stood on the building's gallery with her hands on the railing. The trading post was too far away across the compound for a preacher to make out many details, but he could tell that the woman had long, thick, honey-colored hair that was pulled back from her face and braided at the back of her head. The appealing curves of her body were clearly visible in a high-necked gray woolen dress. It had been months since he had seen a white woman, and he sure hadn't expected to encounter one at this isolated frontier outpost. There might not be another one within several hundred miles. He looked over at Harrigan and raised a quizzical eyebrow. Harrigan kneed his horse to move toward the trading post.
Well, what'd I tell ya?
Who's she?
Mrs. Langley, the bourgeois wife.
You brought a woman out here?
That's her standing right there on the porch. Unless every man jack in his whole fort is seeing things that just ain't there.
That probably wasn't a very smart thing for him to do.
Maybe, maybe not. One reason Mr. Astor had these forts built out here was to spread civilization into the wilderness, wasn't it? Ain't nothing spread civilization faster than women folks.
Having a beautiful woman in a fort full of men is just asking for trouble.
She is mighty comely, ain't she? And sweet as she can be, too. But the boys all mind their step around her, let me tell you. Nobody wants to get crosswise with Mr. Langley, since he's the one who decides how much he'll pay for the pelts. Anyway, he's pretty tough. He's been in a few tussles since he came out here, and not many fellas want to tangle with him.
That didn't surprise Preacher. It took a strong, stubborn man to run a wilderness outpost and to do a good job of it. Before they reached the trading post, a tall man stepped out of the building and moved up behind the woman. He rested a hand on her shoulder in an unmistakable gesture of possession. Preacher wondered if his presence had prompted that gesture. The man had to be Langley, the bourgeois. Certainly, he knew everyone else there was aware of the woman's status as his wife. But Preacher? Well, Preacher was a stranger, and he figured Langley wanted to make the situation clear to him right away so he wouldn't get any troublesome ideas in his head. Preacher and Harrigan reined their horses to a stop in front of the trading post.
I thought you were going out to hunt with Mahaffey and Brown, Quint.
Aye, sir, I was, Mr. Langley. But I ran into an old friend and decided to come back to the fort with him instead. This here is Preacher.
Preacher, eh? I've heard a lot about you, mister. You're Lewis and Clark, John Coulter, and Jim Bridger all rolled into one.
Not hardly, but I have been honored to know John Coulter and Jim Bridger. Those Lewis and Clark fellows were a mite before my time.
One of the men from the gate walked up to the trading post and addressed the bourgeois.
We got some wagons and a herd of horses coming in, Mr. Langley. What do you want us to do?
Langley was a tall, broad-shouldered man, obviously powerful and handsome in a rugged way. He wore high-topped boots, whipcord trousers, a white shirt, and a brown leather vest. He was clean-shaven and had a shock of dark hair. He squeezed his wife's shoulder and moved past her to go down the steps from the porch.
Let the wagons in. Hold the horses outside until I find out what's going on here.
I reckon I can tell you that. The fellow those horses belong to brought them out here to sell and trade them.
Standing next to Preacher, it was easy to see Langley was close to the same height. The bourgeois probably weighed more, since Preacher's musculature was lean and wolf-like, but the two men were pretty evenly matched.
The American Fur Company handles all the business in these parts. And I represent the American Fur Company.
You handle the business in pelts. These are horses.
Anger flashed in Langley's eyes. He did not like being challenged that way. Langley and Wiley Cortland were liable to have some trouble. Well, luckily, that was none of his affair. He'd agreed to help Cortland get there, and he'd kept his word on that.
Ethan, where are your manners? You haven't properly introduced yourself or me.
That's true. I'm Ethan Langley. This is my wife, Judith.
Preacher shook hands with the bourgeois, then took off his hat and nodded to the woman.
It's an honor and a pleasure to meet you, ma'am.
It was no lie about the pleasure. Judith Langley was even more attractive close up. Her face was lightly tanned, and her eyes were an intriguing shade of blue. Preacher thought she was probably in her mid-20s, 6 or 7 years younger than her husband.
Thank you, Mr. Preacher, was it?
No, mister, just preacher. And before you ask, I ain't no sin shouter or sky pilot. I'm just an old trapper.
Don't believe him, dear. As I indicated before, Preacher is something of a legendary character. He's one of the best-known trappers, explorers, and adventurers west of the Mississippi.
Then it's an honor to have you visit us. You'll join us for supper tonight, I hope.
Preacher saw the expression of disapproval flicker over Ethan Langley's face, even though the man concealed the reaction quickly. Langley didn't think much of his wife's idea.
Well, now I'd be plumb delighted, ma'am.
Good. I better go start preparing the meal.
As the wagons rolled into the compound, Preacher noticed the guards along the parapet seemed more alert while the gates were open. That was a good sign. The air of crisp efficiency about the outpost impressed him, despite the fact that he didn't feel any instinctive liking for Langley. But a fella didn't have to be likable to be good at his job. The wagons were directed toward a large open area. Cortland and Freeman rode beside the vehicle.
I suppose I'd better go welcome our guests. We'll have to talk about what we're going to do with those horses, too. Who's in charge of the group?
That fella right there in the coonskin cap.
Langley gave him a curt nod of thanks and strode toward the wagons.
Buy you a drink, Preacher.
That's mighty generous of you. I'm going to take you up on it later. Right now, I better go introduce those fellows so they can work out their business.
Leading horse, with dog padding along behind him, he walked toward the wagons behind Langley. Harrigan shrugged and went along, too.
You know, I never got asked to dinner by the bourgeois missus.
Yeah, well, that's because you ain't legendary.
Cortland had brought his mount to a stop next to one of the wagons. As he swung down from the saddle, his back was to the approaching men. He turned to face him, and Langley came to an abrupt halt.
You bastard!
Langley, what are you doing here?
I'm in charge of this outpost. Those are your horses out there?
They are.
Then you might as well turn around and drive them back to St. Louis, wherever you came from, because there's nothing for you here.
And we'll just see about that.
The hell we will. This fort belongs to the American Fur Company. As the company's representative, my word is law.
Maybe when it comes to setting prices for furs, but not in any other way.
Freeman dismounted and moved up carefully beside Cortland.
You, two fellas know each other, Wiley?
We're acquainted.
Well, what you know about that?
You knew I was here, didn't you?
I had no idea. I wouldn't have come if I did. I'd never seen you again, Langley. It would have been just fine with me.
You knew, and you knew she was here, too.
You mean Judith? You brought Judith into this godforsaken wilderness filled with bloodthirsty savages and wild animals? My God, man, are you completely mad?
Keep your filthy tongue off her name!
Now hold on. There's no need for you fellas to go beating on each other.
Stay out of this! You don't know anything about it.
I'd almost rather die than agree with this lowlife, but he's right, Preacher. This is between him and me.
Preacher shrugged and stepped back. He'd done what he could to prevent trouble. Whatever happened next was up to the two men glaring at each other.
Wiley! Wiley, is that you?
Everyone turned to look. Judith Langley had come back out onto the trading post's porch. Cortland snatched the coonskin cap from his head.
Hello, Judith!
Judith, wait!
She ignored him. Going down the steps quickly, she picked up the skirt of her long dress a little and hurried across the compound toward the men. Langley took a step like he intended to get in her way and stop her from reaching Cortland, but then his mouth twisted bitterly and he moved back. Judith went straight to Cortland and threw her arms around his neck.
Oh, Wiley, I didn't think I'd ever see you again.
I didn't think I'd ever see you.
Off to the side, Harrigan nudged Preacher.
You reckon they're brother and sister?
Not from the way Langley's looking at them.
The bourgeois' face was creased in a scowl. His expression darkened even further when Judith turned her head to look at him.
Ethan, why didn't you come and tell me Wiley was here?
He just got here. Besides, I wasn't sure you'd want to see him again.
Of course I want to see him. Someone from back home.
You weren't on such good terms the last time you saw him. As I recall, you just told him you were going to marry me instead of him.
No, not brother and sister.
All that's in the past, Langley. Judith and I are just old friends now. I'm glad to see her just as she's glad to see me.
You knew she was here. That's why you brought those horses out here. They're just an excuse to come and butt into our lives where you're not wanted.
Ethan, don't be ridiculous.
That's a pretty far-fetched idea. I invested my life savings in those horses. I risked my life and the lives of the men who came with me to bring them out here. And some of those men didn't make it. Do you really think I'd go through all that just to try to come between you and your wife, Langley?
Are you saying it's just an accident you showed up at the fort where we're living?
That's exactly what I'm trying to tell you. The fact that Judith is here is a happy accident as far as I'm concerned, but an accident nonetheless. But you really shouldn't be here. He shouldn't have brought you with him. It's too dangerous out here on the frontier. I know that from first-hand experience now.
Nonsense. Ethan has always taken good care of me. I'm sure he'll continue to do so. Now, I've already invited Preacher to join us for supper tonight. You're going to do so as well, of course.
Judith!
This is my home now, Ethan. I believe I can invite whoever I want to join us for a meal.
Preacher could tell from the look on Langley's face that the bourgeois knew when he was licked. The expression of resignation sort of made Preacher glad he'd never taken a wife.
All right. Cortland can come to supper. We need to talk business anyway, I suppose.
That'll have to wait until after we've eaten. Wiley and I have a lot of catching up to do. In fact, if you want to come over to the trading post with me now, we can get started.
I'd love to, but I have to make arrangements for my horses and men. I have certain responsibilities.
Yeah, of course. Later then.
You have my word.
As the woman started back toward the trading post, Langley and Cortland faced off again.
You can't bring those nags in here.
They're not nags. They're fine specimens of horse flesh. And it looks like you have room in your corral for some of them anyway.
That corral belongs to the American Fur Company.
So the trappers who come here to the post aren't allowed to put their horses in it?
That's different. They're doing business with the company. I reckon if you want to pay rent for the corral space...
At a rate you set, that's highway robbery? No thanks. We're going to have to build a corral of our own for some of the horses. Might as well build one big enough to hold all of them. Or are you going to claim the trees belong to the American Fur Company, too?
Do whatever you want outside the fort. Just don't come crying to me for help if you get in trouble.
I wouldn't even think of it. But just remember, we're the ones who successfully fought off Red Knife and his war party. The Blackfoot show up again, you're liable to need our help.
That'll be a cold day in hell.
Harrigan leaned over to Preacher.
I'm sort of glad I ain't going to supper with you folks after all.
Oh, shut up.
After seeing the horse and dog, Preacher decided to go into the trading post and found it to be large and reasonably well stocked, although some of the shelves were bare. Ethan Langley stood behind the counter at the rear, where he sold goods and traded for pelts, which was his main job. By the end of the summer, the big log warehouse on one side of the post ought to be full of beaver pelts.
I owe you a bit of an apology.
How do you figure that?
When I found out Cortland was the leader of the group you came with, I was angry with you as well. But Harrigan told me you hadn't really been traveling with Cortland for very long. That you just joined forces with them because a Blackfoot war party was on the prowl.
Cortland keeps talking about making me a partner in his horse trading business because I gave him a hand, but I don't want any part of it. I was just trying to help those fellows get here without losing their hair.
You're right not to make any sort of deal with Cortland. He's not to be trusted.
Well, I wouldn't know about that.
I would. I saw how miserable he made my wife back in Missouri.
But she wasn't your wife then?
That's right.
We were both courting her. Judith was a young widow and one of the most beautiful women I've ever known. You've seen her.
Well, she's a handsome woman.
She's more than that. She had men swarming around her like flies. But she narrowed her choices down to me and Cortland, and he lost.
He didn't take it kindly.
You could say that. He was very angry with her. Told her she was making a huge mistake and that I would never amount to anything. I told him to stay away from her and not to bother her anymore. I'm afraid the argument came to blows.
Who won?
You don't have to boast about it.
Preacher looked past Langley and saw that Judith had come through a door behind the counter that undoubtedly led to their living quarters.
I wasn't trying to boast. It's true, though. I gave Cortland exactly what he deserved.
The way I saw it, you both deserved the lumps you got, brawling like a couple of schoolboys. You should have been ashamed.
For standing up for the woman I love? Never.
You weren't standing up for me. You took offense at the things Wiley said about you.
Well, who wouldn't?
I think we've aired quite enough of our dirty laundry in front of Preacher. I'm sorry you had to hear all that.
Oh, shucks, ma'am. I don't pay it no never mind.
Supper will be ready in a little while. Until then, why don't you break out the cider, Ethan?
That sounds like a good idea. Could I interest you in a cup of cider, Preacher?
You sure could.
Judith went back to the couple's quarters while Langley got a jug and a couple of cups from under the counter. He filled them about half full of amber liquid from the jug and handed one of them to Preacher.
It's pretty strong.
Most of the whiskey you find out here will scald the rattles right off a rattlesnake. This can't be any stronger than that. Oh, yeah.
It had a kick, all right, but a mild one. It was smooth and it tasted good. He was about to say as much when Cortland came in. Langley stiffened at the sight of his old rival for his wife's affections. Cortland wasn't wearing the coonskin cap or his rough work clothes anymore. No, he'd put on a pair of tight trousers and a waistcoat with a frilly white shirt under it. He had even donned a cravat. He was, without a doubt, the fanciest dressed fella who had ever set foot in Fort Gifford.
Well, are you going to offer me a drink, too?
Judith heard his voice, and before her husband could answer, she emerged from the living quarters again.
Oh, my word! Wiley, I think you're the most handsome man I've seen in a long, long time. Certainly since we came out here to this wilderness.
Why, thank you. I dressed so you'd know I'm honored by your invitation.
She came out from behind the counter and hurried toward him. Linking her arm in his, she led him toward the rear of the big, high-ceilinged room.
Come on back to our parlor. It's nothing like what you're used to in St. Louis, but I've tried to make the surroundings as comfortable and homey as possible.
I'm sure it'll be lovely.
As Cortland walked past Langley with Judith, he smiled. Langley returned the smug look with a murderous glare. Preacher wondered if Judith truly didn't know what she was doing. Innocent or not, she had just lit the fuse under a powder keg. Langley motioned for Preacher to follow him. The two of them went into the rear section of the building behind Judith and Cortland. She had obviously packed several wagons full of furnishings to bring with her. The main room of the bourgeois living quarters had a good-sized dining table on one side with six chairs around it. The table was covered with a white linen cloth. A china cabinet and sideboard sat against the wall nearby. On the other side of the room, near the fireplace, were two comfortable-looking rocking chairs, one with a smaller table beside it. A loom stood within easy reach. Tucked into one corner of the room was a desk, and in another corner was a pianoforte and a bench. An open door led into a small kitchen with a wood-burning stove, something else hauled out by wagon. Clearly, Langley wanted his wife to have some of the comforts of a home back east, even though she was living in a largely untamed wilderness. The food was already on the table, a platter piled high with antelope steaks, another filled with biscuits, and a bowl of greens from the garden.
I'm sorry we don't have any more vegetables than this. It's too early in the season. But the next time you're here, I'll have potatoes and carrots and onions.
I'm sure this will be delicious. It'll certainly be much better than what we've been eating on the trail.
Yes, ma'am. Them steaks smell plumb mouth-watering.
Please have a seat. I'll fetch the coffee.
Standing fairly close to the chair at one end, Cortland reached out and started to pull the chair back so he could sit down.
That's my seat.
Oh, really? I thought since I'm a guest, you might want me to have it.
Not hardly.
Preacher pointed to one of the chairs on Langley's left.
Wiley, why don't you just sit there?
Putting his hand on the back of the closer chair on that side of the table, Preacher claimed it, so he'd be sitting between Cortland and Langley. Cooperating, Cortland sat down where Preacher indicated. Langley took the seat at the head of the table. The awkward silence that followed lasted only a moment until Judith returned from the kitchen carrying a tray with four china cups on it.
Here we are.
Well, the fact is, the atmosphere didn't get all that much less awkward. She handed each of the men a cup, starting with her husband. Judith sat down at Langley's right hand.
All right, everyone, help yourselves.
Preacher dug in, delighted when he found everything tasted even better than it smelled. He wouldn't want to make a habit of it, but damned if having a home-cooked meal wasn't a real treat.
So, you've become a horse trader, Wiley. I must say I'm not surprised. Working in the freight business, you were around horses all the time.
That's right. I think I've become a pretty good judge of horse flesh over the years. It's easy to pick out the real thoroughbreds just by looking at the clean, smooth lines of them.
Langley frowned. They were talking about horses, but clearly he thought Cortland actually meant something else. And you know, it was possible that was true. He'd seen for himself how Cortland liked to pick at Langley. The bourgeois had one huge advantage, though. He had wound up with a woman that both of them wanted.
Why don't you tell Preacher how the two of us met, Ethan?
I was working at a store in St. Louis.
You ran the place.
I did, but somebody else owned it. It doesn't mean I avoided the hard work. One day, I was unloading some bags of flour from a wagon, tossing them from the wagon bed into a wheelbarrow so they could be taken inside.
Those were big, heavy bags, too, but Ethan didn't have any trouble handling them.
I wouldn't go that far, because I did have some trouble. I tossed one of the bags too hard, and it went over the wheelbarrow and fell onto the loading dock. It busted open, and flour dust flew up into a cloud. Unfortunately, the bag landed right next to
me. I was covered with dust almost head to foot. I'm sure I was quite a sight.
You were. You looked like a ghost, all covered with that white dust like that. A beautiful ghost.
I agree. I thought you looked beautiful, too. It would take more than a little flour dust to change that.
You were there, too?
Yes. What Ethan neglected to tell you is that it was a wagon from my freight line delivering the flour to the store. I wasn't driving, but I'd come along to supervise the delivery. And that's why Judith was there in the first place, because I'd told her I'd be there. She was coming to see me.
It's true, I knew Wiley first. He was a dear friend. I hope he still is.
Of course, but I was more than that back then. I was a serious suitor for your hand.
That didn't last long after she met me.
Please, Ethan. We should leave all the hard feelings in the past. There's no need for them now. Everything is settled.
That's right. Judith is your wife, Langley. I just want to be friends with both of you.
Langley's expression made it pretty clear he didn't believe that for a damn second. Neither did Preacher, for that matter. But it was none of his business. And he was going to keep telling himself that until he left Fort Gifford, which might be pretty soon after all, the way things were going. The tension did not lessen through the meal. Cortland and Langley couldn't go more than a few minutes without one insulting the other or commenting on their rivalry for Judith. She was increasingly aware of it, and it embarrassed her. When the meal was finally over, she cleared the table. Preacher could see the relief in her expression as she left the room with plates and silverware.
I brought some brandy with me. Could I offer each of you gentlemen a glass?
Brandy, huh? I didn't know you had an appreciation for the finer things in life, Langley.
You should have known. I married Judith, didn't I? A man couldn't find anything much finer in this world than her.
I can't argue with that. I could point out, however, that sometimes a man winds up with something much finer than he really deserves.
Oh, I think things generally work out pretty much like they're supposed to.
Cortland's eyes narrowed. and he placed his hands flat on the edge of the table as if he were about to push himself to his feet. Langley tensed. Preacher was between them, and he intended to stay there. As a courtesy to Judith, he figured he ought to keep the two fellas from fighting. She wouldn't want a brawl breaking out in her own home. Langley made a visible effort to relax, forcing a smile onto his face again.
I'll get the brandy.
Langley walked over to the nearby cabinet and took three heavy crystal tumblers from it. From a matching decanter, he splashed a couple of inches of amber liquid into each glass and carried them back to the table. Preacher and Cortland got to their feet.
I'd like to propose a toast.
Suppose you've got the right to do that. Go ahead.
To Judith. I wish her only the best, even though she deserves better than what she got.
With a flick of his wrist, the bourgeois flung the brandy in his glass right into Cortland's smirk.
Oh, hell.
Wiley lunged at Langley, swinging the glass in his hand as if he intended to smash it against the bourgeois' head. But Preacher moved quicker, blocking Cortland's charge with his body and grabbing the man's wrist. Preacher hung on to Cortland's wrist with his left hand, wrapped his right arm around Cortland's body, and wrestled the horse trader toward the door.
What's going on out here? What was that shout? Ethan, what did you do?
What any man would do who found a predator in his house. I'm getting rid of it.
God, let go of me, damn you! He's been asking for this for a long time!
I'm not here, damn it, it ain't decent.
God, just let me at him! I'll show Judith she picked the wrong man. She ought to be with me, not with him!
Oh, Wiley, please don't act like this! I never wanted to hurt you!
Well, you did! Worse than that, you hurt yourself! You should have a fine home back east, not this... this squalid little hovel in the middle of the wilderness!
Wiley!
And you! Bringing her out here where she's liable to lose her hair to bloodthirsty savages! You want her scalp hanging in some Blackfoot chief's lodge? Do you, Langley?
Judith is perfectly safe here.
You haven't had to bury your friends who were killed by those Indians.
Don't worry about my wife. I'll protect her.
You can't protect her. You're nothing but a damn coward.
Let him go. I thrashed him once. I can do it again.
Ethan, no, I won't have the two of you fighting over me.
Don't worry, Judith. He can't hurt me. I'm not afraid of him. He's the one who's afraid.
Langley started toward him with fist clenched.
We'll see about that.
Preacher had Cortland close enough to the door that a hard shove sent him staggering through it. Preacher hurried after him.
Preacher, stop protecting him!
I ain't protecting him. I'm trying to keep you from making a fool of yourself. Now, you ain't gonna do any good brawling over a married woman.
Maybe once she sees what sort of man her husband really is, she won't want to be married to him anymore.
Preacher's hopes for at least a temporary end to the trouble were quickly dashed. Langley strode into the trading post's main room. Judith came with him, plucking at his sleeve.
Take him outside, Preacher. We're gonna settle this once and for all.
You don't have to do this, Ethan. You don't have to prove anything to me.
It's not you I'm trying to prove anything to. I'm tired of Cortland trying to come between us. And after tonight, he never will again.
Preacher wrestled Cortland through the door and onto the porch. When they reached the ground at the bottom of the steps, Cortland jerked loose from Preacher's grip.
All right, out here is fine. Just gives me more room to move around.
More room for me to kick you all around the fort, that's what you mean.
Come on and try.
Preacher stepped out of the way. Now, if they were outside, he wasn't going to interfere with nothing anymore. These two stubborn varmints could do whatever the hell they wanted to each other. Judith ran down the steps and clutched Preacher's arm.
Can't you stop them?
Ma'am, I probably could, but it wouldn't do any good. They are bound and determined to have it out. If I stop them now, they'd just go after each other again some other time. Best to let it play out.
Cortland dug a knee into the small of Langley's back and looped an arm around his throat from behind. Bearing down with his knee to keep the bourgeois pinned to the ground, Cortland hauled back on Langley's throat.
Preacher!
Langley managed to drive an elbow backward into Cortland's midsection. Both men climbed to their feet.
Please stop! There's no need to do this!
Langley and Cortland approached each other cautiously. They had taken each other's measure. They had each dealt out and absorbed some punishment. they were trying to figure out how to end the fight now. Cortland suddenly fainted, and when Langley went for it, Cortland stepped in and snapped a jab that landed on Langley's nose.
No!
Cortland went after him and tried to ram his knee into Langley's groin. Langley twisted aside and took the blow on his thigh. He tangled both hands in Cortland's shirt front and threw him aside. Langley flung both arms around his opponent's waist, lifting Cortland off the ground.
Oh my God, Ethan, no!
Langley slammed Wiley to the ground. Wiley was out cold. Langley stepped closer to his fallen opponent, and for a second, Preacher thought he was gonna kick Cortland.
Well, that ought to do it. That blackguard will never bother us again.
Oh, Ethan.
Judith, what's wrong? I beat him.
Judith turned and ran back into the trading post. Langley stared after her, blinking in confusion.
What happened?
I reckon you won the battle, Hoss. But I ain't so sure about the war.
Later, Preacher went into Cortland's camp. He sat on the lowered tailgate of one of the wagons. Otis Freeman was with him, using a rag to wipe away the blood from the scratches on Cortland's face. Elkins stood nearby holding a candle so Freeman would have some light to work by. After a moment, Freeman set the rag aside and took hold of Cortland's chin. He carefully moved Cortland's jaw back and forth.
Well, it ain't broke anyway. You'll still be able to eat, but it's liable to hurt a little for a few days. You're gonna be pretty stiff and sore all over, I guess.
So's Langley. I gave as good as I got.
Elkins took a flask from his pocket, uncorked it, and held it out to Cortland.
Take a swig of this, boss. It's prime corn liquor. It'll dull the pain some.
I appreciate that, Elkins, but I want to feel the pain. I want to experience every ache and throb so I'll remember what Ethan Langley did. I won't forget any of it until...
Wiley's voice may have trailed off, but Preacher knew exactly what he meant. Cortland would not forget until he had evened the score.
Maybe that fella didn't exactly fight fair.
He fought fair. Ask Preacher if you don't believe me.
Freeman and Elkins looked at the mountain man.
I didn't see no dirty tricks on either side. There ain't no rules in a bare-knuckles brawl, but nobody tried anything underhanded. It's a good, clean fight.
The next time it'll be different. Langley won't ever beat me again.
Are we still gonna stay here and try to trade and sell those horses?
Of course we are. Why wouldn't we?
Well, I just thought, with the trouble between you and that fella...
That's personal. The horses are business. Got a lot riding on this, Otis. Everything, in fact.
Yeah, I know. I just wasn't sure you'd want to stay here, that's all.
I'm staying here until I do what I came to do. What about you, Preacher? Are you going to stay?
Oh, no. I never planned to hang around once I helped you fellas get here. Fact is, I'll probably be pulling out early tomorrow morning. There are plenty of beaver out yonder. They're just waiting for me to trap them.
Plenty of redskins waiting to kill you, too.
Well, that won't be any different than it's always been.
We'll miss you when you go. Are you sure you wouldn't like to stay and take a share in this operation for all the help you gave us?
No offense, but not hardly. I'm ready to head out for the tall and uncut.
We wish you well, then. And I hope our paths will cross again sometime.
Preacher gripped Cortland's hand.
Think I bruised a knuckle or two on Langley's ugly face.
Preacher had heard the old saying about good intentions and the road to hell many times in his life. That night, he got proof of it when he returned to the fort from Cortland's camp. Quint Harrigan, who was sitting on a stump in front of the fur warehouse, hailed him and raised a jug.
Quite a ruckus earlier. I didn't know who was gonna win.
I ain't so sure, but what they both lost.
Aye, when two fellas go to fighting over a woman, she's usually the only one who wins.
Are you just gonna wave that jug around, or is there anything in it worth sampling?
Oh, it's worth it. Here you go, have a swig.
Ooh, not bad. For panther piss and rattlesnake poison, that is.
Oh, yeah. Give me that jug back, then.
How about coming out with me and Roland and Bob tomorrow?
I thought those other two already brought in some fresh meat.
Not enough. There's a supply boat on its way upriver that's supposed to get here in a week or two, and there'll be a lot more men on it. Langley wants to smoke enough meat and lay it aside so there'll be plenty of provisions on hand when those other fellas get here. So we're going hunting again tomorrow. Langley pays pretty good for meat, and he's even more generous when he's trading for it.
Harrigan, that smacks of working for wages.
How's getting paid for bringing in meat any different than getting paid for bringing in pelts?
Preacher supposed there wasn't really any difference, but it still didn't feel right to him.
You know, I turned back to the fort today because I wanted to give you a hand, Preacher. You could help us scare up some game tomorrow. Ain't nobody better at it than you.
Be all right. I guess I ought to spend a little more time around folks before I head out into the big lonesome again.
The four men left before sunup. Preacher figured if they could bring down a few elk or antelope while it was early, he still might be able to pull out from Fort Gifford today. If that didn't work out, he'd have to leave the next day. Brown and Mahaffey were friendly enough. Even though Preacher didn't warm up to him immediately, Harrigan was surly. He'd polished off most of that jug of whiskey the night before, and he was paying the price for it. Preacher didn't mind. He figured Harrigan would perk up as the day went along. Even after being confined inside the stockade walls of the fort for less than a day, Dog and Horse seemed glad to be out. Dog, in particular, bounded all over the place with an energy that belied his years.
No, how old is that critter anyway? You've had him for as long as I've known you.
Ain't neither one of us spring chickens anymore. But I reckon we can still get bright-eyed and bushy-tailed on a morning like this.
Speak for yourself.
It was beautiful, all right. The sun coming up and spilling red and gold light over the valleys and the snow-capped peaks. The colors were soft at that time of day, like the world was nothing more than a giant canvas on which a heavenly painter spread his brush strokes.
Suddenly, an arrow hit Bob Mahaffey in the back of the neck. An arrow struck Roland Brown in his upper left arm. They had ridden too near a grove of pines at the base of a hill, Preacher saw as he wheeled horse around. The Indians had hidden in those trees and waited for the four white men to ride into range. Preacher jerked his rifle to his shoulder. Then, he did the unexpected and kicked the stallion into a gallop straight at the trees. Harrigan and Brown followed his lead and charged after him. Preacher put the reins between his teeth, slid the empty rifle into the sling he'd rigged for it on his saddle, and pulled both pistols from his belt. Guiding Horse with his knees, he raised both pistols. He jammed the empty guns behind his belt and grabbed the butts of the two pistols sticking up from his saddlebags. Harrigan and Brown raised their pistols as well.
Come on!
Preacher veered Horse to the side. Their only real chance of survival was to make it back to Fort Gifford before the warriors caught him. Harrigan and Brown rode up alongside him.
Are we heading for the fort?
Yeah!
What about Bob?
No chance for him. He's bled dry by now.
Brown's mouth twisted in a grimace under the blonde beard. He and Mahaffey were friends, and no man worthy of the name liked to abandon a friend. But he nodded reluctantly and leaned forward in the saddle, indicating he understood. He would stick with Preacher and Harrigan. Preacher twisted in the saddle to look over his shoulder. Warriors mounted on wiry Indian ponies were boiling out of the trees to give chase. By charging the ambushers and dealing out some damage of their own, Preacher and his companions had taken a slight lead. He figured they were about 5 miles from Fort Gifford. The chase was not going to be a long one, no matter how it turned out.
They might have heard us shoot back at the fort.
They knew we went out to hunt. They'll just think that's what they heard.
Not shoot fast like we done.
Preacher looked over his shoulder from time to time. The warriors stuck stubbornly behind them. As he'd expected, most weren't gaining on him, and some had even fallen back quite a bit. But a handful of men mounted on particularly swift ponies were drawn closer. Preacher, Harrigan, and Brown galloped through a gap between a couple of small ridges. It was wide enough for the three of them, but not for the whole war party. The three warriors out in front went through the gap first, really the only ones who stood a reasonable chance of catching up to Preacher and the others. They came up onto the flat beside the river. The walls of the fort were visible about a mile away.
Woohoo! We're gonna make it! Don't see us coming and have the gates open!
Preacher looked back again. The three Indians closest were hanging on doggedly, with the rest of the war party straggling behind. But those three warriors were still dangerous. One in particular was mounted on a really speedy pony. The animal practically flew over the ground, its legs a flashing blur. Brown's horse was beginning to labor. The animal was running a valiant race for its life, but bone and sinew and muscle had their limits.
Come on, Roland! It's only a little ways now!
I'll make it! You fellas go on and don't worry about me! I'll make it!
The warrior in the lead was only about 20 yards behind him now. As Preacher glanced back, he saw the way the man's face was painted, and that was all the confirmation he needed to tell him that these were Blackfoot. Red Knife's bunch had to be. The warrior raised his bow. The mountain man twisted his head around and saw Brown sagging forward over his horse's neck. The feathered shaft of an arrow stuck up from the man's back. The Preacher could tell that the head had penetrated deeply into Brown's body.
Roland!
Harrigan slowed his horse so he could reach over and grab his friend's arm. He steadied Brown and kept him in the saddle. But that son of a gun on the fast pony was drawing another arrow from his quiver. With Brown and Harrigan slowing even more, he stood a good chance of doing even more damage to him. Once again, Preacher did the unexpected.
Oh!
He hauled back on the reins and pulled horse to a sudden skidding stop. He plucked the tomahawk from behind his belt. A keenly honed flint head cleaved through bone and brain, practically cutting the man's head in half. Preacher wheeled horse around again and galloped to catch up to Harrigan and Brown, who had raced past him when he stopped to throw the tomahawk. The three men rode side by side, with Brown in the middle still being supported by Harrigan. When they were within a quarter mile of the fort, Preacher saw men lining the parapet. Rifle barrels bristled all along the wall. The men inside Fort Gifford knew they were coming all right, and so did Wiley Cortland and the rest of his party. They drove the herd toward the entrance, leaving the wagons behind. Preacher figured there was a good chance Langley was having a conniption fit. But once the horses started streaming through the opening, there was no stopping them. Nor could any white man deny shelter to another in such a situation.
We're gonna make it!
Preacher thought it was tempting fate to make such a bold declaration, so he kept his mouth shut and concentrated on his ride.
Whoa! You're giving up!
Preacher looked over his shoulder. The rest of the Blackfoot were falling back. They had slowed down, realizing they weren't going to catch up to the three men in time. The rest of the war party was slowly coming up behind them. Preacher didn't heave a sigh of relief just yet. He and his companions might be safe for the time being. They didn't know what else Red Knife had in mind. Men were waiting to close the gates just as soon as they rode into the fort. Men lifted Brown from the saddle and carried him toward one of the buildings. Cortland's men had the horse herd under control. The crowd parted to let Langley through.
Where's Mahaffey?
He didn't make it. The Red Devils got him with their first arrow.
What about Brown?
Don't know. Some of the fellas took him off to take care of him. It looked pretty bad, though.
Damn it. I'm sorry I sent you out after more meat.
Don't be. We knew the risks. A man can't ever count on being safe out here.
Cortland pushed his way to the front, along with Otis Freeman. He gripped Preacher's arm.
Are you all right?
Yeah. Harrigan and I were lucky. Come through it without a scratch.
Well, thank God for that, anyway.
Cortland looked over at Langley.
And thank you for letting us and our horses in. To tell you the truth, I wasn't sure you would.
I wouldn't leave any man out there to face those savages, even you. I should go let Judith know everything's all right.
The man calling was on the parapet.
Mr. Langley, you better come look at this!
Langley strode over to the nearest ladder leading to the parapet and climbed up. More men streamed up the other ladders, including Preacher, Harrigan, Cortland, and Freeman. They gathered at the wall to look out across the rolling plains along the river. Preacher saw the Blackfoot war party about a quarter mile away. But that wasn't what had prompted the man's frightened summons. More Indians were riding over a swell of ground behind the war party. And they kept coming and coming, swarming over the little hill like ants.
My God. How many of them are there?
There must be hundreds of them.
Preacher thought that was a pretty good guess. He put the number of Blackfoot at 300 or so. And even though the tide had slowed down, more warriors continued to trickle over the rise and join the others.
Looks like Red Knife rounded up a few friends before he came to call on us.
I didn't know there were that many Redskins on the whole damn frontier.
They were just playing when they jumped us, weren't they? If they'd all hit us at once, we wouldn't have had a chance. They wanted some of us to get away and come running back here.
Yeah, more than likely. Red Knife's putting on a little show right now. He knew if we hot-footed it back to the fort with a few warriors chasing us, he would draw everybody out, and he'd have a good audience when he let us see the real size of his war party.
Why is he just sitting out there? He has us outnumbered probably 5-1. Why doesn't he just go ahead and attack?
Now don't rush things. He's gonna get around to it in his own sweet time.
One of the warriors was sitting slightly ahead of the others, staring toward the fort. The preacher had a hunch it was Red Knife himself.
He's having too much fun right now. He thinks we're sitting in here getting more scared with every minute that goes by.
He ain't far wrong about that.
Someone should take a shot at him. That would knock the wind out of his sails. Can somebody hit him from here, Preacher?
The same thing had occurred to Preacher, and he'd already gauged the shot in his mind. A ball from his rifle would carry that far, but it would take a minor miracle to hit what he was aiming at.
Let me get my rifle. I'll give it a try. You fellas keep an eye on him. Sing out if he does anything.
There was not much of anyone on the parapet looking away from the war party. They were all staring raptly at the Blackfoot. Preacher quickly returned with his rifle. He loaded it with efficient, methodical movements. Quint Harrington stood next to him.
You'll have to draw a bead on him pretty quick-like. If he sees that somebody's aiming at him, he's liable to light a shook.
Somehow I doubt that.
Red Knife's stance struck Preacher as that of a man who didn't believe anything could hurt him. And after gathering such a large war party, he would not want to display even the slightest sign of cowardice in front of them. His defiance of the white men had to be absolute.
Move back. Give him some room.
I got plenty of room.
Preacher nestled his cheek against the smooth wooden stock and peered over the barrel, figuring distance, elevation, windage.
You want to do something? You might try saying a prayer or two.
Red Knife suddenly lifted the rifle he held. The war chief brought the gun to his shoulder and aimed it at the fort.
I reckon he's seen me. All right, Red Knife, that's the way you want it. Let you and me trade shots.
Powder smoke spurted from the muzzle of Red Knife's rifle at the same instant. Dirt suddenly kicked up about 50 yards in front of the wall as the ball fired from Red Knife's rifle plowed into the ground. Less than half a heartbeat later, the war chief's pony abruptly lunged to the side and toppled, throwing Red Knife into a rolling sprawl.
Just a hair low. Got the horse and not the man. Damn shame.
Red Knife scrambled to his feet, waving his rifle over his head. Like a tidal wave of horse flesh and humanity, the war party surged forward. Preacher saw Red Knife swing up onto a riderless pony one of the warriors brought to him. But after that, he couldn't pick out the war chief anymore. There were just too blasted many of them.
Spread out along the wall. Hold your fire until they get closer.
I'm in charge here.
Then you better start giving orders. Them Blackfoot ain't gonna wait around for you to figure things out.
Spread out, hold your fire like Preacher said.
Feeling of fear was palpable in the air, yet the men took their places along the wall with no signs of panic. Most of the trappers at the fort had been through their share of battles against Indians. Their calmness seemed to spread to the employees of the American Fur Company, some of whom were veteran frontiersmen as well.
How long should we wait?
I'll give you the nod and you can sing out. And we got two things on our side, more guns and these walls. You tell every second man to step back.
Every second man step back. The men in the front fire first, then step back and reload while the others take your place.
You're catching on.